This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. We're back with our open clinic segment, and this month joining us is consultant ophthalmologist and vitreoretinal surgeon, Dr. Kenneth Fong. So if you have any questions or concerns regarding your eye or your vision, this is the time to ask your question. You can actually give us a call. It's 0377332900. You can WhatsApp 0187898899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kenneth, how are you today?
I'm great, Mira. Thank you. It's been a while.
You know, I don't know, but yeah. I've been doing the show with you for years now.
10 years, I think. Yeah, yeah.
Well, easy,
yeah,
10
almost
years.
As long as George.
George holds the record.
Oh, record, yes,
really.
Yes, of course.
Almost from day one.
We won't want to take that away from him.
No, we won't. You know, who is, I mean, I didn't know you were a vitreoretinal surgeon.
Yeah.
I mean, who is that? What do you do?
Among other things I do in my life. Well, it's a fancy word for the fact that I do surgery on the back of your eye, which is the retina. So there are a lot of certain conditions which are very serious, like retinal detachment, diabetes, complications, and that's what I do most of my time.
And that's a subspecialization.
Yes, you have to, after finishing your years of training as an ophthalmologist, then we do another 2 or 3 years further training in this field. And okay. It's actually a very important field because it deals with the retina, which is probably the most important part of your eye.
Okay.
And it can't be replaced.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, COVID-19, MCO, RMCO, CMCO, you know, what's it been like for you?
It's been hectic, Mira. It's been very hectic. Of course, during March and April, we were quiet because of the full MCO. But since then, as a lot of places have seen, there's been a pent-up demand of patients coming for treatment. A lot of my patients actually missed their appointments during that period, and a lot of them lost vision.
Really?
Yeah, because patients that have macular degeneration or diabetes in their eye, they need regular follow-ups for injections. And if you miss the interval for your injection, the disease can come back again and cause permanent loss of vision. So this has been seen all over the world as well. But in place, we are trying to make protocols whereby the patients are spending less time in the clinic. So they are booked a certain appointment, they come, have the injection, and then they go home. Mm-hmm. And we try and reassure them that it's safe to travel. Okay. I think that's the great thing, they're afraid to travel.
Okay, and there were restrictions to travel as well at that time.
They could come, they needed to go through many roadblocks. Mm. So I had patients out of state with a letter, and they managed to come for treatment, but obviously it's not easy.
Okay. Yeah. We've always spoken about age-related eye issues. Yeah. Macular degeneration is just one. Glaucoma, you have cataracts, you've got diabetic retinopathy. Are those numbers still pretty much the same in this country?
Yes, I think it's getting worse. In fact, unfortunately, we've not made much headway with diabetes. I think this year, in fact, I noticed many, many more patients coming during July and August with diabetic complications, primarily due to Musang King.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding.
Particularly to the
because
durian?
Because the prices were so cheap. It was as low as 30 ringgit a kilo. And this Musang King was meant to be exported to China. And it's not. So all the locals had to take it up. So there's been a lot of good deals. You have frozen durians being delivered to your house, basically sugar on demand. And a lot of my endocrine colleagues would tell you that the one thing that you don't have a medication for is durian. Because a durian-induced hyperglycemia or spike in sugar, it can be so high that no amount of drugs can counteract it.
Okay, so yeah. These are diabetics who indulged
yes,
in durian?
Yes,
What happens?
And then they get either hyperglycemia, very high sugars, they need to be admitted, or they get worsening of their retinal problems, diabetic macular edema, swelling of the macula, or bleeding in their eyes. So these things then lead, so they in June, July, they might have the durian, and then you'll see quite soon, August, September, they present with all the eye problems.
Okay, and is it bad?
It can be quite bad, yes, it's pretty bad. I had a couple of patients with a sugar. He came to my clinic with a sugar of 25.
Wow.
A normal is 6 to 7, so it's 5 times above the normal limit.
Mm-hmm.
And he had terrible retinopathy in his eyes. And he admitted he had been binging on durian.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And we know that diabetic retinopathy is something we need to look out for when you are diabetic.
Yeah. Yes.
for some reason, the eye gets affected
correct.
Quite badly.
The eye is the window to your soul. I think we've said this many times before. And in fact, once you have retinopathy in your eye, you can be sure you have kidney problems and cardiac problems as well. And a lot of the time, once they have blindness from that, they will then soon after get kidney failure and stroke and other complications.
Okay.
So that is really what we call a microvascular disease.
So basically, based on the common eye diseases and vision problems, amongst the main four, do you feel diabetic retinopathy is where we seem to be doing
worse?
We are
number one.
Yeah,
Malaysia is the best in this, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yes, we are. In the last year's National Health and Morbidity Survey didn't help.
Yeah.
You know, it increased a little, actually,
in terms of
diabetics.
Yeah.
So it's our open clinic segment with Dr. Kenneth Fong. He's an ophthalmologist and vitreoretinal surgeon. You can ask him anything you want, actually. The number to call is 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So let's talk about COVID, Dr. Kenneth. Everybody was advised not to touch our eyes and our nose and, you know, don't touch your face. Why the eyes? What is so special about the eyes that we were told not to touch it?
It's because it's a very, what do you call, a wet part of your eye. You produce tears. It's got conjunctival tissue. Conjunctiva is like a skin, but it's got lots of blood vessels. So it's a place where the virus can actually enter your body because it comes into contact with the conjunctiva and then it can enter your bloodstream and spread to the rest of your body. And also, viruses like coming to the eye. It's a very nice place for viruses to grow. So in the past, we had outbreaks of what we call adenovirus conjunctivitis, which is a simple cough and cold, or hand, foot and mouth disease and things like that. So all these viruses will come to your eye. You get a short period of red eyes. Usually it's short limiting and then it's fine. But with COVID, you can get it and then it can spread to your lungs and then you get the full-blown COVID. It's been well recognized that the COVID patients in ICU, about 10 to 20% do have some form of red eyes. Whether or not it was really conjunctivitis is hard to say. But I think they already showed that they had a case series about 10 patients with conjunctivitis would confirm COVID. So definitely that's a route of transmission. And which is why we have to wear face masks and also the eye protection. That's very important.
Okay, so what is this eye protection? Because we all our masks sit just under the eye.
Yeah.
What is this eye protection we're talking about?
There's a full face protection that you see a lot of the cabin crew dealing with staff, the frontliners.
You're talking about the shield?
The face shield, yeah. Okay. The frontliners that are taking the COVID samples, they have to be completely protected. For you and me, if we wear glasses, that helps a little bit because it makes it a bit more difficult for you to rub your eyes because the route of transmission is you get the virus on your hand and then you rub your eyes. So that's so by cutting that down, that helps a lot.
There was an interesting question outside just now when I was, you know, coming in to do this show. Whether or not COVID would spread even more during the monsoon season because of floods, right?
Yeah.
So imagine we swim as well.
Oh, yes.
Can it spread like that?
Yeah, it's possible. I think it's been shown that this is a very resilient virus. There was a study done in Hungary or somewhere in Europe where they tried to puncture the virus with a nano needle with very strong and it couldn't puncture the virus. And it's been shown the virus can survive on fish, frozen seafood samples from Europe to China. So I'm sure in a wet environment, it would thrive.
Okay.
And which is why we're not allowed to go to public swimming pools because of the, you know, risk of spreading it. So it's possible, but I think monsoon season, you're probably more at risk of dengue, maybe bitten by a crocodile or a snake than COVID. But, you know, it's hard. We haven't been through it. This is almost 1 year now. So hopefully it doesn't get too bad.
Get to that stage.
Yeah.
There was another question here that I have about contact lenses. If you do wear contact lenses, how does that affect you touching your eye and does that disrupt the situation in the eye?
Contact lens wear wasn't recommended during the MCO restrictive period because if you had a infection in your eye, you might find access to care quite difficult because the government clinics were closed, the eye clinics were actually closed to walk-ins unless for severe emergencies and similarly for private as well. So But now that we're more relaxed, the same restrict. You have to be careful because if you wear a contact lens, you're always touching your face and your eyes to take out the contact lenses. So be extra careful. Wash your hands thoroughly. I recommend my patients use the disposable contact lenses, even though it's not good for the environment, so that you don't have to keep the contact lens in a case with a solution.
So would you say just wear your glasses then?
Some patients need the contact lens because for work or so if their power is very high, if you wear glasses, it's very heavy and the vision is distorted. So some patients were very short-sighted. Contact lens is the only solution.
Okay. I have another question here for contact lenses. Can it scratch your cornea?
Definitely. It can. It's a foreign body. And the most common time it scratches when you're trying to take it out. So if you have long fingernails, be very careful. I've seen many corneal abrasions from patients with varnishes on their fingernails, and you know it's not nice to do.
Okay, yeah. All right. So now the eye doctor also says now Q-Tex and nail polish got problems. The orthopedic surgeon will say, please don't wear high heels. Now we've got even this. Yeah. What are we gonna do?
I think the high heels. I like the high heels story. I think if you speak to any lady, most of them would say for sake of vanity they're willing to risk it.
Absolutely. I mean, it gives you confidence. You're higher. You are.
Well, it works. It works. Yes.
Okay. We have a question. We have a caller, Robert, on the line. Robert, you have a question.
Oh, Dr. Fong.
Hi.
If a patient with retinitis pigmentosa comes to you, what treatment do you recommend?
Okay. Thank you very much, Robert. First of all, what is that?
Retinitis pigmentosa is an inherited retinal problem whereby these patients have night blindness. They can't see at night and it progressively gets worse and their field of vision gets smaller as they get older. And this is due to the retinas itself, the cells in the retina just gradually dying off. 50% of the time is due to a known genetic defect. So you inherit it from your parents. But the other half are sporadic. So there's been great advances in this field. In fact, in America, they've started gene therapy for retinitis pigmentosa for a few specific gene defects, whereby they inject the gene underneath the retina in an operation, and it's been shown to improve the vision in these patients.
So the good thing is they have identified the gene.
Yes.
And they've been able to do that.
Yes, but there's more than 200 genes.
That's what I was wondering.
So
which one are you?
Six so far.
I see.
And these are mainly in the Caucasian, the North American population. This treatment is not yet available in Asia. For the vast majority of patients in Malaysia that have retinitis pigmentosa, there's no treatment yet available. And I always tell them, don't fall for scams. Don't take all these alternative therapies. I've had a patient go for stem cell therapy in Philippines, but they went blind. I've had a patient spend hundreds of thousands of ringgit on acupuncture and all sorts of things because they're desperate. Unfortunately, there is no easy treatment at the moment. But I have referred patients to UK and US for genetic testing. But most of them had genetic defects that were not yet treatable.
Okay, maybe because in the Asian side, it's a little different, right?
And there's so many gene mutations.
Yeah, we need to do more research on Asians, Dr. Ken,
yes,
don't you
yes,
think?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
I mean, we're so reliant on the West.
Western, yep.
And it doesn't really apply to us. We'll come back and find out more. Keep your questions coming in. It's our open clinic with Dr. Kenneth Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and vitreoretinal surgeon. You can ask him any question you want about your eye. The number to call, 03-7733-2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our open clinic segment. Today it's about the eye. Dr. Kenneth Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and vitreoretinal surgeon in the studio with me. He's also president of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology. If you want to ask him a question, just give us a call. It's 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now the questions are coming in really quickly. Dr. Ken, I'm just very quickly. We were talking about floodwaters and swimming pool water just now. So we've got one question about, swimming pool water has chlorine. Doesn't it kill the virus?
Yes, it does. But you have to understand that outside the pool, if you're in a changing room, in an environment where there's towels being shared or, example, cross-contamination, that's where the risk is. And also the You know, like in the past, in public areas, it's quite common to get fungus infections transmitted in the wet changing room area. So this is a similar area where viruses can be transmitted.
So we're not too concerned about the water in the pool as
probably
such.
In the pool itself, it's fine. In fact, you're wearing goggles and stuff. It should, but it's outside when you go to a common changing area.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, during the pandemic, I mean, during the lockdown, you know, adults were doing work from home, students engaging in digital learning. So we have a question here about, can watery eyes be caused by spending two continuous hours on the handphone? That's one question. But in general, what's your advice? You know, and we're doing more and more of this looking at the gadget thing.
I've got huge amounts of Zoom fatigue. Every day I'm doing a virtual meeting. In fact, tonight I have to give a talk to Europe and there are 8 hours time difference. So it's a huge problem. But the main issue is because when you stare at the computer screen for more than an hour, you forget to blink. And then your eye reacts by pain and redness. And then you have this thing called reflex tearing. So it tears, but the tears are not efficient at solving the problem. So on top of that, you also have the posture issue, the neck problems, the back problems, and also the arms and fingers crossed at the laptop. So the key is really keep the screen about 20 feet away, a reasonable distance.
20 feet the screen can be
20 centimeters, something like that. Not 6 feet, not as far as that, but at a certain distance. And then every 20 minutes, rest for about a minute or so. And then the font size, if you can't see it, you make it bigger. Don't be worried about blue light, because the biggest source of blue light is the sun. So we've been exposed to the sun for centuries and there's no issue. And blue light filter glasses don't help. They don't really make a difference. What you need is actually to rest your eyes and stare at a distance after about 20 to 30 minutes on the screen.
Okay, so the 20-20-20 rule.
Yeah, I was trying to come to that. Yeah.
Okay, so every 20 seconds, what is that?
I can't remember.
Take 20 seconds every 20 minutes to look 20 feet
something
away.
Something like that, yeah. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, not your screen 20 feet away. It's too far. Yeah, it's further than my room. Yeah.
But exactly. The blue light thing, Dr. Ken, is all over the internet.
Yes.
Protect yourself. I know you've said, and you know, the literature says that the verdict is not out. But you think that one day we will find out that this blue light is doing some damage to us?
All the studies have been inconclusive. There's only one study that showed blue light was damaging, and that was in a laboratory where they shone direct blue light onto a cell, a retinal cell, without the protection of the lens or your cornea, and they showed the cells died. But then that would be expected anyway. But in a natural circumstance, there's really no evidence to show that the blue light glasses help at all.
Okay.
And it really, I would consider it more like homeopathic treatment. It makes you feel better. You pay double the price for the lens, but the reason why your eyes are tired is you're staring at the screen for too long.
Okay, so take 20 seconds every 20 minutes to look 20 feet away.
Yeah.
That is really the rule. So with and I've always been wondering about this supplements for your eye.
Yes,
we've got a question here. Yeah. Can nutrition help with eye health?
The only condition where supplements have been shown to reduce your risk is age-related macular degeneration. And that was on a humongous study where they looked at about 100,000 patients in the US, and they showed that taking high-dose antioxidants, lutein and zeaxanthin, reduces your risk of macular degeneration by about 20%. There's no evidence for glaucoma, cataract, myopia that supplements help. You may want to take it for the sake of feeling better, but really it doesn't help, and it's actually a waste of money. And I'm happy to report that, you know, there was a lawsuit against myself two years ago.
How did that pan out?
Well, they've dropped the suit.
Oh.
The court has granted damages to us. Surprise, surprise. So last week the court handed down the person that the company selling the product has decided that they won't proceed because they know there's no evidence to show that there's of that. So no surprises there, but it's just a waste of everyone's time.
Yep. What about general eye health? Does nutrition help?
General eye health, yes.
What about carrots, Doctor?
Definitely.
I mean, we were told from young to eat carrots.
Yes. You know, I think you need to eat colorful vegetables, because what you want is the pigments in the vegetables to go to your eye. So lutein, zeaxanthin are the natural pigments. So a lot of it will help protect your macula from macular diseases like macular degeneration. So carrots contain beta carotene, which is helpful. But again, you have to take in moderate amounts. And if you were to choose your dinner tonight, if you choose vegetables, go for the colorful vegetables, which are full of natural pigment.
Okay.
That's my advice.
Okay. Yeah. So we've got somebody who's read your book, I remember, you know, on the nutrition and healthy eating and all of that. We've got another question here. I'm going to go with Zaidi's question. I had conjunctivitis in both eyes. I underwent fascio emulsification.
Yes.
My right eye has a long-sighted lens. My left has short-sighted lens. Yeah. So my vision is balanced by glasses, but it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Should I undergo surgery to correct my vision by having the long-sighted lens for both eyes? That sounds terribly complicated.
Yeah, so he's got two separate problems.
Yeah.
Conjunctivitis, which is red eyes. Phaco emulsification is surgery for cataracts. So he's had cataract surgery and probably from the story, one eye was long-sighted, one eye was short-sighted, and we would normally try to balance it out with a choice of lens powers in the eye to make it equal in both eyes so that he can be more comfortable.
Okay.
Yeah.
At every show, we always have a question on floaters.
Yes. Yeah,
what are they? What are they? And is there a treatment available?
Floaters are age-related changes in the inside of your eye. Inside your eye, it is transparent vitreous jelly. And as you get older, it just breaks up into smaller pieces. Patients who are short-sighted get it much earlier, maybe 10 years younger. And most of the time, floaters are harmless. It gets annoying, but it's harmless. Very rarely, patients with severe floaters need surgery. But most of the time, you get used to it. If you go online and Google treatment for floaters, the term laser might come up once in a while. This is not often done because in our experience, there's been a trial done in America that showed that your laser for floaters makes no difference. And in fact, I've seen patients who've had 10 to 20 treatments, laser treatments on floater elsewhere. In fact, their floaters are much worse. So supplements don't help. Your brain is a wonderful organ. So what it does is over time, there's a thing called neuroadaptation, whereby your brain just blocks out that floater in your field of vision. But for some patients who really cannot stand it, it affects their driving and work, surgery is the only option for them. And surgery is by a vitrectomy operation where we actually physically remove the floaters.
How do we get our brain to take control of the situation?
The brain just blanks it out. So it's like if you hear a dripping tap in your house, the noise from a tap, the first week you might be annoyed by it, but after a week or so, it's actually there, but you don't notice it anymore. So similarly, when you have this disturbance in your vision, it's there initially, but one day you wake up and you realize that it's not bothering you anymore.
You get used to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another question on nutrition. Yeah. Can consuming grapefruit and lemon
yes.
help improve your vision?
Not really. I think they're high in vitamin C. There's not much evidence that vitamin C makes much difference to your vision. But I think in moderate doses, that helps as a general, you know, vitamin C to prevent infection and things like that, but not specific for the eye.
Okay. Hezril is asking, why is it so bad to look at your handphone in the dark?
There was a few newspaper articles on that recently about patients losing sight in the dark. It's not really due to the luminance or the brightness of the handphone because that's pretty standard. The sun is much stronger. One of the cases we saw that lost vision was because the patient was using one eye to look at the handphone, and then the other eye was closed. So there's a postulation that one eye was overstimulated and the retina was, you know, damaged as a result. But we don't really have any hard and fast rules about that. And so I can't answer really any more than that.
How do you manage your children and their gadget time?
They've got to earn it, Mira. They've got to do their homework. For my son, he has to go cycling in the neighborhood, at least 15 minutes. My eldest daughter, she's now 15. She was made to swim and play tennis. So they have to earn it. You have to balance out your gadget time with outdoor activities so that they don't have to need glasses. Because excessive near work will cause you to become short-sighted. And we are seeing an epidemic of that. There's a huge millions and millions of kids who are short-sighted. And this lockdown, MCO worldwide, is going to cause a whole generation of myopic children as a result. We're going to see this for years to come.
In just such a short period of time?
Yes. In the winter time, in European countries, where kids are locked in the house, you will see a spike of myopia. in March or April, a lot of them will go to the optometrist, and many of them will be about increase their power by about 1 or 2 diopters, so 100, 200.
But that happens every year. So every year they're increasing their power?
Yeah, there's a seasonal spike.
Right.
But then because then they're young, it's reversible. So maybe over summertime, they don't spend as much time indoors, so that spike in myopia seems to taper off. But in the Asian countries where we are all year round indoors, studying, going for tuition classes, spending hours on the computer, that myopia rates have just become epidemic. So like I've said it before, in Singapore it's 90%, yeah. China is 90%. So China just this week, I think, has announced a major public health push to stop this myopia. So they're going to force their children, school children, to go outdoors during breaks.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it's well, because it has a huge public health toll on their healthcare system.
Okay, all right, yeah. That's of concern, honestly. And, you know, by going outdoors will help the children's general health, actually.
Yes,
not
yes.
Just the eyes.
Running around. And, of course, we have to lobby our, I've said this before, Ministry of Education, lobby our local council, increase our public spaces, don't tear down our parks, you know, enough of development, because they need a place to run around in. Otherwise, it's quite dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We have a question. How do I prevent or minimize the sty in my children's eye?
Sty. Yeah, that's difficult because that's usually caused by oily skin. So these children may have eczema or excessive oil production on their glands of their eye. So it can cause swelling of the eyelids. And so the way we prevent it is something called lid hygiene, whereby you use a hot compress for 2 minutes on the eye twice a day. And then you take a wet cotton bud and then scrub the eyelashes like how you brush teeth, and that sort of reduces the oil buildup on the eyelashes.
Okay, so just a hot compress.
For 2 minutes, because heat melts oil, so the oil becomes more fluid, and then you use the wet cotton bud to wipe it away so the glands are not blocked up.
And do you do this every day if you are prone to a sty?
Yes, it's like brushing your teeth.
Oh.
So I tell my patients, if you don't want plaque growing on your eyelashes, I show them a picture. And they will be very, very motivated.
It must be a scary-looking picture, I'm sure. We have a question here. Do you need to sanitize your glasses when you go out now? Because a lot of us wear glasses, we wear our masks.
Yes.
And do sanitizers ruin the lens or the glass?
Yeah, you have to be careful because a lot of the lenses are coated. So what I use myself is just a microfiber lens cloth just to wipe out whatever dust. Once a week, I might use a special alcohol-based lens wipe just to give it a good clean. But generally speaking, you don't really have to, because the virus, if you have a virus on a surface itself, it won't survive for long on a hard surface.
Okay.
So you can be reassured on that.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting question here. Someone's asking, what about atropine drops like Singapore to prevent...
Atropine. Yeah.
Okay, to prevent myopia in children. Oh, you can actually prevent it.
Yes. No, we don't prevent it. Once you have a certain degree of myopia,
once
say 100, 200,
with it. Okay.
So we can prescribe what we call low-dose atropine. Atropine is actually a dilating drop, but in 0.01%, it has no effect on dilation, but it stops the growth of your eyeball. So it's a very interesting drug. And Singapore and China have done very good trials to show that it does help prevent progression of myopia. So if you're at 200 and you're started on this atropine eye drops, there's a good chance that you can stay at 200 rather than increasing to 500, 600.
Do you think that's going to be a big thing here?
This is quite common practice now. A lot of our patients, a lot of our children in Malaysia are on low-dose atropine eye drops.
Wow.
Until they're about 16, 17 years old.
Okay.
Once a day.
Sure. And so after that, there's a chance you probably won't need it. So what I'm trying to get at, it's not a long-term...
No. You use it in your teenage years usually, early teens, preteens and teens, and it's to stop the elongation of your eyeball. So if your eyeball gets bigger, you become short-sighted.
Okay. All right. It's our open clinic. Dr. Ken Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and vitreoretinal surgeon in the studio with me, president of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology. Call us and ask us anything you want to do, anything you want to know about your eye. We've got tons of questions here. I'm trying to get through them as best I can. But the number to call us, 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodhi, and in the studio with me, Dr. Ken Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and vitreoretinal surgeon, president of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology. Dr. Ken is having a good laugh because I didn't change my glasses when I was reading the market update, and so I got the numbers wrong. Fancy doing that in an eye show. But okay, so we've got some more questions here about acupuncture and, you know, how do you actually deal with certain situations when you are tempted to use acupuncture and alternative treatments.
Okay.
What do you do when an eye doctor tells you there's nothing much you can do, right? Some people say no harm in trying alternative treatment. But just before that, we'll come into a question. Ling is on the line. Ling, you have a question for us.
Yes, I'm Ling. Afternoon, Dr. Fong.
Hi.
I have two questions. One question is, what causes dry eyes and what's the remedy for it? And second one is, I have one eye which, whatever lens they put on my eyes, that they say that it can't help. My eye is not responding to whatever lens. So I don't know what's the cause of that situation.
Okay, I'm just curious, Ling, what do you do at the moment?
No, I'm just doing real estate. Yeah.
No. For your situation, given that there are not many remedies available, so what do you do?
For dry eyes, I just put some drip. Yeah, and the second one is for my the other eyes. I just wear normal glass. That's all.
Okay.
We'll
get Dr. Ken to answer that.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you, Ling. Dry eye is a complicated disease. The most common cause of dry eye is age-related, when our lacrimal gland stops producing tears, and the solution is to replace the tears with a variety of eye drops. We have newer treatments available now. One of them is called thermofractional therapy, whereby we use intense pulse heat on the eyelids itself to stimulate the tear ducts, the lacrimal gland, and also to stimulate the open up the pores, and that seems to help for some dry eye patients. For the vast, and then sometimes you have to block their tear ducts. So we put punctal plugs in so the artificial tears stay longer in the eyes. So that's the main remedy, and there's many, many eye drops to use. Some patients need omega-3 supplements, fish oil supplements, to help improve the quality of their tears. As for why your lenses don't help, you probably have a degree of what we call amblyopia or lazy eye. Lazy eye is a condition whereby one eye is weaker than the other, no obvious cause found. And as an optometrist would check your glasses, they can't get you to 6-6, even though with the prescription. And if they've seen an eye doctor where no other eye disease was found, the most likely problem is what we call a lazy eye.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moving on to the next call. Zainal, you have a question for us?
Yeah, I just want to know, currently I have keratoconus in my eyes.
Yep.
I want to know how to make sure it doesn't get worse.
Sure. Dr. Ken, what are keratoconus?
Keratoconus is the cornea, the front of your eye, bulging out like a cone. So our normal shape of our cornea should be like a football, round. But in keratoconus, it becomes more oval or cone-shaped like a rugby ball. And it's, as it progressively gets worse, your vision drops and you can't correct it with glasses. You need hard contact lenses, rigid gas movement contact lenses. The latest therapy to stabilize the cornea is by corneal collagen cross-linking. So we put some riboflavin eye drops to loosen up the cornea, and then we shine UV light, which then freezes the cornea or strengthens it in that position. And that seems to stabilize the eye from progressing. But for advanced cases of keratoconus, as what Zainal is worried about, you may need a corneal transplant. So a corneal graft from someone else is sewn onto your eye.
But that's a little difficult, isn't it? Because you're dependent on a donor.
Yes. The biggest problem now is we can't get donors.
Yeah.
So in Malaysia, we rely on eye banks from America, Sri Lanka.
Oh, there are such things
as
eye banks.
Yes, there are eye banks available.
Okay. Yeah. We have a next question from Elena. Elena?
Hello, hi.
Hi.
Song. I've got a quick question regarding, I understand obviously that LASIK surgery, there's always complications that you can get from its side effects, like it can affect your vision at night, and I want to know whether that same thing applies for people who do laser, to do lens implants.
No, that's a great question. So, no, if you use a laser to do your cataract operation, it won't affect your night vision because you're replacing the lens with an artificial lens. But with regards to your first question about comment about LASIK, about that having side effects, actually LASIK is quite safe. I've mentioned this before, but there's a newer treatment option called implantable columnar lens, or ICL, whereby instead of cutting the cornea and burning off tissue, you actually place a contact lens permanently in your eye to correct it. Yeah.
Okay. We have a question here. If someone has on both eye a pressure of 23, and if you have very thick cornea, is it true you don't need eye drops for another few years?
Yeah, there's a correlation between thickness of the cornea and your eye pressure, because if your cornea is thick, sometimes when you measure the eye pressure, it may appear higher than normal, but in reality, it's lower. So this is, and then on the opposite end, if you have very thin corneas and you have low eye pressure, you may actually have glaucoma, which is high pressure in the eye. So we have to take all those into account. So a pressure of 23 is not considered very high. It's borderline high. But again, to diagnose glaucoma, you need to look at the nerve, the optic disc of the eye. You need to do several tests, such as an OCT scan of the optic disc. You need to do a visual field test, take a family history, measure the eye pressure over several visits to have an idea of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, earlier on, I asked you about alternative treatments.
Yeah.
It feels like for so many eye conditions, you come to a point where it's difficult to prevent damage or deterioration.
Yes.
And then there is this thing to want to seek alternative treatment. What is your advice?
So there's two common diseases that I have many patients seek alternative therapy for. Number one is glaucoma. Glaucoma is a blinding progressive disease where the high pressure causes permanent loss of vision. And a lot of the time, the patients present very late to the clinic. They've lost quite a lot of vision. And a lot of them are young. Unfortunately, a lot of them due to use of traditional medicines like steroid eye drops. So they've caused the glaucoma. So then, when the time they see the doctor, there's not much we can do. We can lower the pressure with medications, but we can't reverse their vision. The second group is what retinitis pigmentosa. This inherited disease, patients with progressively go blind with no treatment. So these two groups of patients often seek alternative therapies, acupuncture being one of them. So there's two in my interactions with the traditional complementary medicine therapies. The majority of them are quite conservative. They wouldn't be so aggressive. They would try, but encourage you to also seek the normal care. On the other hand, there's a small group who are quite aggressive. So I've seen patients go blind from acupuncture needles being poked into their eyes. So they've had bleeding in the eyes, they've had retinal detachments, they've actually physically gone blind because they've had treatment. And one of my patients actually went for floaters treatment for acupuncture for floaters. Obviously, it doesn't work. And he had severe loss of vision after that. Mm-hmm. So I think don't be tempted to try that. Supplements also, be very careful about what you take. A lot of the time is called the grief status. So we're going through a lot of stages of grief in a sense that first is denial, you have a medical problem. Secondly is anger. Then after that is desperation, you seek for anything. And the final stage is actually acceptance of your condition. And once you reach that level where, okay, I can't change it, I try and make it better. So for those patients who are truly affected, blind, they have blind societies to help them move on with other careers or things like that. Support groups are very important.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question, I've got high cholesterol resulting in lipids in the eyes. Can I minimize these lipids? I didn't know that they collect in the eye as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I said if you look at a picture of your retina, you can tell a lot about a person. Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence in diagnosing, you know, just your general health. I think it's quite fascinating. You want to tell me more about that?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring it up because recently our eye center has collaborated with another hospital to do what we call remote screening. We take a picture of the retina, and then we actually upload the image to the cloud and get an artificial intelligence software to grade the images. And we can tell the patient with a certain degree of certainty their risk of getting certain eye diseases and heart diseases. And this is all based on artificial intelligence grading tens of thousands of retinal images and understanding the patterns and giving you a sort of a predictive factor. So, for example, in the UK, Google has worked together with Moorfields Eye Hospital, and they've come up with a program called DeepMind, where they can look at your retinal image and tell you how old you are, whether you're male or female. They can tell you your cholesterol level. They can tell you your blood pressure level to within 10% of accuracy. And on top of that, predict your 10-year risk of glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, macular degeneration, and cardiac diseases.
That is really quite fascinating.
So really, from just a single photograph, we can tell a lot.
About your health.
About your health, yes.
Just not the eye.
Also your eye. Yeah,
the eye and
the rest of your health, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, that's really fascinating. Yeah. Do you think you'll be out of a job at some stage?
No, I think my work will get even more because what these programs are doing, they are siphoning up all the at-risk patients. So my clinic will be filled more with patients that actually need the longer counseling or treatment rather than healthy, the worried well patients. Yeah.
Okay. You know, it is World Sight Day next week, the 8th of October. Would you have a message for us?
I think your sight is your most important sense. That's been shown many, many times whereby people are willing to sacrifice an arm or a leg just to get their vision back because you can't function in society. You can't drive, you can't work. So it's very important that you look after your eyes, and prevention obviously is better than cure. If you are diabetic, you should get your eye check once a year. If you're above the age of 45, you should also get your eye check for glaucoma to check your eye pressure. And finally, take care of your eyes by reducing your screen time and get lots of exercise.
Yeah, and if you're diabetic, watch that durian intake, isn't it?
It's very tempting. But yes, you have to.
I mean, that was quite an important takeaway, actually. You don't make that, correlation.
Yes, it's a choice. You can choose what to eat.
Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Vina.
Dr. Kenneth Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and vitreoretinal surgeon, president of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology, speaking to us in today's Open Clinic segment on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.